Hi, you are listening to the second season of Record of Change. My name is Matthias and I'm your host for this episode. Record of Change listens to 8 individuals located across the world about how their lives are being twisted by the COVID-19 pandemic. We listen to our interviewees at several points in time as we are eager to learn about how their lives are changing. Today, we listen to Fida Shurab, who's a project and fundraising officer based in Gaza City, Palestine. Working for the Adfaluna Society for Deaf Children, Fida will share with us how the environment she works in got even more marginalized after the pandemic hit in late August. In our first season, Fida had already shared how the NGO she's working for intends to foster resilience of people with and without disabilities amid a life under siege. I grew up in Germany and I have never been to the Gaza Strip. Yet, after working in Ramallah for a year now, I'm a little familiar with the circumstances in Gaza. And as we all had to learn this year what is a lockdown, I was very keen to have Fida's perspective on our podcast, as the Gaza Strip is locked down now for more than 12 years. Let's listen to her. Thank you again for joining us today. It's been exactly 3 months that we talked. We talked on August 19. What has happened? How did your life change in the last 3 months?
So, as usual in the Gaza Strip, life is not stable, and usually there are so many changes in every second and every minute. So, last time we talked, the COVID-19 was only reported to the people who are coming from outside the Gaza Strip and who are kept in the quarantine. But all of a sudden, reported cases were among the community, and it was in the 24th of August where 4 people were reported to be infected with the virus. Now, we don't know how things will be in Gaza, so things started to take a different pathway in terms of lifestyle, restrictions, the way of living, where to go and where not to go, what kind of things to take into consideration and what can be of danger. So yes, it has been totally changed in life. Taking consideration, it was also accompanied with other difficulties, because at the time that the coronavirus was reported in the community, it was the time we only had 3 hours of electricity per day. The political situation was not stable. There were air strikes like for 10 days happening every day, every night. So everything was messed up, actually, during the past period, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I remember when we talked the last time, you said, let's hope there's no positive cases coming to the community. And then just a few days later, you sent me the email.
Yeah.
So do you still remember what was your first thought or feeling when you heard that there's a positive case in a community?
Yes, actually, it's like not knowing what to do and not knowing how things will be happening, how our life will be changing with all the restricted and curtailed resources, especially the health resources. Like if one case was only reported, we will be in a complete crisis. And then they were reported in Al Buraj camp, which is a very densely populated area in the Gaza Strip. So now you know that it will be largely spread in the community. And yes, day after day, we kept hearing more reported cases and more reported cases. It was somehow controlled during the lockdown, but after the government has left some of the restrictions and the lockdown was eased, then new cases and larger numbers were reported. Nowadays, we have almost reached 600 of reported cases on daily basis. At first, the old people who were reported to have COVID-19, they were kept in quarantine. But now, with this larger number of people who are reported to have COVID-19, the quarantine will not be able to receive such large number of people. New resolutions were issued, like only difficult cases will be in the quarantine, or people whose homes are not accommodated for being confined or being isolated from other family members. So we don't know actually what will be happening in the few months. This is the case. We don't know. We usually don't know what will be happening. So yeah, it's difficult and confusing. And still, till this moment, it's very confusing. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to say I can imagine, but I cannot, to be honest. So when we talked last time, I think we also said that maybe first time ever since the blockade of the Gaza Strip, it was kind of, so to say, a blessing in disguise that there was this blockade because it was more difficult for the virus to come in.
Yes.
And I know that in the beginning, no, still, if people want to come in, they need to quarantine for 21 days, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm wondering, how did the virus come in?
Still, the zero case was not identified till this moment. And now people who are coming in from the outside, they are not put in the quarantine because they are asked to have the PCR test that shows that they are not infected before entering Gaza. And then they can go home and they can be kept in home confinement for 14 days. But they are not kept in the quarantine anymore. They are kept in the quarantine. And also those who have difficult home conditions will be kept in the quarantine because, as I said before, the curtailed resources, you can deal with this large number of people who are being infected. And on daily basis, there are expectation that the number will be at rise every day that we encounter.
If you say very densely populated and refugee camps, can you give us some example? How can we imagine living conditions? How can we imagine this, just to picture this a bit?
You know that 70% of the people in the Gaza Strip are refugees. So many of the Gaza Strip areas are being refugees camps. So when you enter a refugee camp, you will see very narrow pathways and homes are stick together. Like my neighbor will be sharing the same window that I'm sharing to, or the same wall of my room, for example. I'm not living in a refugee camp, but I'm giving you the example of the densely populated refugee camps. Cars cannot move in the refugee camps. Like they would stop at the entry of the refugee camp, and then you would walk by foot on the refugee camp. You would hear the neighbors talking to each other when you live in a refugee camp. Basically, knowing that the social context also of the Gaza Strip, like people are very socializing with each other. If there is a wedding, they would go and congratulate each other. They can't go without congratulating each other. If there is a death case, they would go also to present condolences. The social context controls the way of people thinking. Still, they take precautionary measures, but with like 2 million people living in only 300 kilometers, you can't go without being infected. So we're expecting everyone in Gaza will be infected someday, somehow, now, or even tomorrow. So everyone will be in the danger of being infected. At the beginning, the total lockdown was forced. And large areas of the Gaza Strip were marked as red areas and where they were totally closed. Like my area, which was near my work here in Atfaluna, it is one of the main areas in the Gaza City, was totally locked. No one is allowed to go out in the street unless they have a permit from the government. Why you're going, where you were going, show me the permit. So we only stayed for 2 days at home, and then only minimum number of employees started to work during the lockdown because there was humanitarian work needs to be done to those who are at home and to deliver the humanitarian aid to people. So it was difficult going out of home, presenting the permit and then going to work and then make sure that you will be at home before the curfew is back again at night, like at 8, no one is allowed to move in the street. So like everything needs to be done at 7 by maximum so that you can go home.
So you said you didn't know what to do, but how did you personally react to it? I think you live with your family. So what did change for you in the first days, especially when the positive cases were reported?
Yes, we only chose 2 members to go out of home to bring anything related and needs to the home. Me to go to the work and my brother to go for anything related to the family to bring anything. And usually steps of precaution and measures before leaving home and even before entering home, like total sanitization, the face masks, the gloves and everything. Well, like when we bring something to the home, we should be totally sanitized. It's like phobia. Like if you touched the door, you need to go and wash your hands. Not one, but even different times. It's really difficult and it caused us so much of anxiety. Because we're not afraid from being infected only because we know the health system in Gaza is very poor and weak and crumpled. So we don't know the degree of infection and the degree of danger on the lives of ourselves and even our families. So this is the risk that we're afraid of, not only being infected, but what if we were infected? What kind of health services will be getting? Would that be enough? If we would survive this or not? Those questions came to our minds because we know the total condition of the Gaza Strip. So the more we take precautionary measures, the more we are more anxious, actually.
Yeah. Well, before you said maybe everyone will be affected in the end in the Gaza Strip because it's so densely populated. I can see you through the video and I see you have a mask under your chin. So what is your perception of people around? Are people still cautious or would you just say, okay, then so be it, we just take the risk?
Most of the people are cautious, but still there are people who are not totally precaution about the danger of this COVID-19. Now at work, everyone should be wearing the mask unless he's alone in the office. But the face mask is something that comes with rules, and not following the rules will be negative consequences. We are not allowed to approach each other. Only 1 meter should be 1.5 meters, and even more should be when we communicate with each other. Actually, we learned that two of our colleagues who are deaf actually were infected with coronavirus. And now new procedures, and we should be planning how to proceed in our services and how to take more serious precautionary measures to protect the beneficiaries and even the staff. I would like to tell you something about people with hearing disability and when they can communicate with each other. You know that they use sign language. So sometimes using sign language, it requires like touching the face or even touching each other for like notifying each other with something, because they cannot call you. They would like poke you at the shoulder. So it's difficult for them. So we have organized a session for them to tell them on the importance not to touch each other, because this might be a source of infection as well.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Interesting. I mean, that's an angle of society probably that many people who are not affected directly don't think of. And
yes,
in my bubbles, in my context, maybe we think of elderly people that have to be more careful and people with other health issues. But yeah, to be honest, I never thought of deaf people, how they communicate. And of course, we now all learned like not to touch the face and so on. Yeah,
because many of the signs record like touching the face when you sign. So they need to know now how to avoid this when they communicate with each other, which makes the communication even difficult for them.
You were already talking about the healthcare situation. Maybe again, I have a kind of an idea, but maybe for listeners coming from a very different background. So what is the situation of healthcare system in Gaza? Could you give me an idea of what is the healthcare system in the Gaza Strip?
Yes, you know, in the Gaza Strip, we have only one main hospital, one main public hospital, and it's already suffering from lack of resources, either in devices, equipment, even human resources. Let's start with the human resources. With the unemployment rate and with the government unable to hire people or even pay salaries for them, and usually the medical staff are being hired by projects that are supported project to hire medical staff, and they are not permanent, they are only temporary contracts to this medical staff. So usually there are other health NGOs that support the public health sector with services, but still it's not enough with 2 million people who not even need the COVID-19 treatment but other kind of treatment. Usually, serious health conditions are either referred to the West Bank hospitals or to the Egyptian hospitals. They are not treated in Gaza because of the lack of resources. The siege has imposed even more challenges in the entry of medical equipment and medical supplies and medications. Those things are serious factors that contributed to weaken the health system in the Gaza Strip.
In our last talk, you shared that the only outlet and the place to go to when you have free time is the beach. And I do know those pictures of a very crowded seafront. How does it look like now?
It's the same. It's very crowded seafront. And now it's closed at 5 o'clock. So it's even more crowded because everyone would like to go to the sea before it's closed. Now, even we don't enjoy the sea as we used to because we're afraid to go and then would be infected with the virus. So our only outlet is being even difficult to be reached. You know, we don't want to go to restaurants or public places because we might be infected, so we choose to go to the sea, so the sea is even more crowded now. Maybe in winter, the crowd will be less because it's cold and rainy, but still, as we did not get into the serious winter, it's crowded.
You just mentioned the winter is coming up and it's going to be colder. I know that here in Germany, people are discussing it is a higher risk of more people meeting in closed rooms, which increases the risk to contract the virus. Do people have same or similar concerns in Gaza?
Yes, it's the same concern. And also knowing that in winter, flu is even more potential. So people are afraid that flu would somehow be a sign of COVID-19 and how to differentiate between the two things. Knowing that also the vaccine for the flu is not available in Gaza for those who have health problems. I think the government will force a curfew from even 6 o'clock to ban any kind of visits to the home.
So since the outbreak, how did you usually or most preferably spend your leisure time?
Actually, okay. The COVID-19 has even increased the work pressure. So now you have to work in COVID-19 responses and the normal work that you used to have. And with this online thing taking most of the time, I don't remember the last time that I had some kind of leisure time. I only like in 1 month, I go out only once a time a month. Either I spend my free time like reading actually, but really leisure time has been snatched away since the COVID-19 has been spread in the Gaza Strip. Yeah. Mm.
You just mentioned work pressure has increased.
Yes.
Last time you already shared with us how you shifted as much as possible online. How's it going for you and maybe how have you changed in the course of the last 3 months?
Still, we're doing the work online remotely. And this requires very detailed planning and knowing that not everyone in the Gaza Strip have internet access or even devices like laptops or smartphones to get into or access to the remote services. And in August and September, our focus was only on providing the humanitarian aids like food baskets, hygienic kits and PSS kits and giving psychosocial support for the people because being confined and being afraid of the coronavirus or even losing a job or source of income due to this pandemic would increase psychosocial distress on the family. So we're trying to alleviate those stress factors on the families and helping them through the holistic approach, like providing them with the aids and even supporting them psychosocially. And then in October, when the restrictions were eased, we started to go back to normal services. Like we have the vocation trainings, but they are planned and being implemented in a very precautionary measures. Like usually the course would have from 10 to 15 participants, now only 10 participants, and we use the big halls and we spread them. For the courses that cannot be implemented online, like furniture making or cooking and culinary arts. But for the courses that can be implemented online, we're keeping the online interventions. For people who do not have access to internet, we're contacting them by hotline or our field staff would go and present the service at home. So it's even more pressure, like you're doing three methods of interventions for the same service so that we're not leaving anyone behind. Our awareness raising campaign continues to raise the people awareness on the how to protect themselves and their children. And we're using the inclusive approach, like any awareness material should be provided with audio and sign language so that the people with hearing disability would understand what's all about. Nowadays, everyone is talking on the e-learning. And, you know, still the e-learning approach is not implemented in a very structured method, especially in Gaza. And it's not even inclusive for the people with disabilities and especially people with hearing disability. So we have launched a campaign, advocacy and lobbying campaign, to advocate that the e-learning approach should be inclusive to all students, either with or without disabilities. So the whole work has been either humanitarian, the normal services, interventions that we're being doing, more lobbying and advocating for the rights of people with disabilities, especially in crisis and difficult times. We're trying to build the resilience of our beneficiaries because this pandemic is seemingly not to be end any soon. So the beneficiaries should have the coping mechanisms, learn how to move on in their lives and have the resilience to be living a normal life. We're trying to do so, but you know, the life in Gaza circumstances cannot be very easy. So those services should be not only being short-term services, should be long-term services, because the need demands is even increasing.
Yeah. And then about your work. So you are also a fundraising manager, right, at Faluna?
Projects and fundraising officer, yes.
So in terms of fundraising, did you perceive any changes so far due to the pandemic? Maybe money is short everywhere.
Yes. Before the pandemic and even during the pandemic, there are shortages of fund in the Gaza Strip because the needs are increasing in the Gaza Strip. So more funds will be needed. And still, this pandemic is affecting the whole world. And priorities of donors have changed somehow. So more efforts for fundraising should be done to convince donors that the Gaza Strip is a priority and there are needs to be met. There are interventions to be met, not only the humanitarian short-term interventions, because this is not a day or two situation. It seems something that will last. When we plan for the risks, usually in the projects, like we have some kind of brainstorming, what kind of risks we'll be facing. Usually we have the political and the economic and then social. We had never have the natural or health risks. Now we have this COVID-19 to integrate it into the whole planning, and it even puts us to think of other risks, not only the spread of the COVID-19, but like natural risks that might happen. So designing a programmatic intervention and funding those programs should be a priority. So in our fundraising strategy, we're not only including the humanitarian sector because it's only short term. We're taking into consideration the programmatic intervention. Like when we talk about e-learning, we think about launching an inclusive e-learning platform that can be reached by children with and without disabilities. We have developed programs that include the IT solutions for the people who will be targeting in the vocational training and giving them like freelancing and digital marketing skills so that when they are at home, they still can work and even sell their products and have some source of income. For the psychosocial and protection component, we have designed a project for children, women, and girls with disabilities to protect them from any danger and even to keep their psychosocial resilience being boosted. So we're not only thinking about the humanitarian intervention, we're trying to take advantage of the current pandemic and develop the interventions so that they are more sustainable and they are of impact on the lives of our beneficiaries. But it's challenging, actually, because donors have priorities and this thing is affecting the whole world.
Yeah, I can imagine that it's even more challenging now.
Yes.
I have a very, very different question, because in the last 4 years, Palestine was pretty much affected by foreign politics of the US.
Yes.
The Trump administration did not really work in favor of Palestinian people. So how did you perceive the recent election, and do you see any changes coming up from this?
Actually, no, because all the previous administration were not in the favor of the Palestinian causes. A negotiation have been like going since ages, and nothing was done. The siege was imposed before the Trump administration, and nothing was done by the Obama administration. And now we expect nothing from Biden, because we know that the US is a total ally for the Israeli occupation. Nothing actually to hope from this administration, because it has been always the case, the US totally supporting the Israeli occupation. So either Trump's or other administrations, the same will be for the Palestinian people.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because even though I'm aware of politics regarding Palestine of longer term, but of course I've been following more closely in the last years, and I could see that Trump is just like so aggressively collaborating with Netanyahu and Israeli.
Yeah.
So, but that's interesting. So if you could make a wish, which politician would you like to meet?
You mean a foreign politician?
Yeah.
Okay. For the time being, I don't see any politician who think neutrally about the Palestinian cause. So like meeting them is like and asking for our rights and speaking for our people. I think this will only be used for propaganda and social media and other things, but it won't change anything. So for me, I would never ask to meet any politician, because unless they are really, really into doing a change for the sake of the Palestinian people, it will be in vain, like meeting and spending hours taking photographs and make it visible through the media and social media. It's nothing. Unless it leads to somewhere, I won't be doing it. And I don't believe that the current politicians do believe in the Palestinian cause. All of what they say is like being words. No actions were being taken. We're suffering, and day per day we are encountered with more suffering, and no one cares. So I see all these public events without any serious actions. I think we need more and serious actions rather than like meeting our politicians and having some kind of speech, or I don't know. Like, let's invest in something serious. Let's do something for the people who have been waiting like for more than 60 years to live normally, like as any person around the world.
This was episode 6 of our second season with Fida Shorab from Gaza City. Stay tuned for the following episode of Record of Change, when we will listen again to Ellen from Bangalore. Ellen will update us on how the pandemic has influenced not only his professional, but also his private life, not being able to see his partner for many, many weeks. If you liked what you heard, please review or follow us on your favorite podcast provider or our website, recordofchange.com. You can also follow us and recommend our podcast to your friends on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. This podcast is implemented with and by members of the Bosch Alumni Network, a community that brings together former and current fellows, grantees, and staff members of the Robert Bosch Stiftung and its partners.